The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading you from the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Okay, let's start off with an article of natural interest from the Reader's Digest. And this is one of those sad stories that we have to live with in this day and age. The Last Days of the Pioneer, and there's a picture of a newspaper called the War Road Pioneer sitting on a table, final edition sign, and a plate of hash browns and a cup of happy empty coffee next to it. After printing the local farming, sports, and civics news for 121 years, another small-town paper faces the end of a noble enterprise. Whenever she thought her small staff would be facing a particularly stressful deadline day, Rebecca Colden declared a Bloody Mary Monday. This was definitely one of those Mondays, indeed the last of them. The War Road Pioneer, the weekly newspaper that Colden published, and which had served its tiny Minnesota town just below the Canadian border for 121 years, was one issue away from certain death. When Colden woke up that day, she listened to a Christian hymn that had buoyed her spirit of late. This is my story, this is my song, praising my Savior all the day long. I know that. Now she was trudging into the newsroom on a cold May morning with vodka, olives, and tomato mix. A mock-up of the front page greeted her on the newsroom printer, screaming out a bold, striking headline, Final Edition. She sat at a desk and opened some bills, one of them stamped past due. I don't want to feel like I'm letting the community down, but I also know I'm a small business, and it's dollars and cents, says Colden. I'm broken with the decision. I'm just broken with it. With the distribution of its final issue on May 7, 2019, the War Road Pioneer, which had printed about 1,100 copies per week, joined roughly 2,000 newspapers that have closed in the United States over the last 15 years, according to the study by the University of North Carolina, researchers soberly titled, The Expanding News Desert. Today, in many American communities, the researchers noted, there is simply not enough digital or print revenue to pay for the public service journalism that local newspapers have historically provided. The World Road Pioneer was full of photos of fishermen and their outsized catches, news of awards won by children and Shriners, and stories about city officials, the school board, and local sports. This end was what the desert might look like. No hometown paper to print the obituaries from the Hedgeson Funeral Home. No place to chronicle the exploits of the beloved high school hockey teams. No historical record for the Little Town Museum, which had carefully kept copies of each issue from the newspaper in boxes, going back to 1897. And what about the next government scandal? The next school funding crisis? Who would be there? Who would tell these stories? It was easy to imagine the news moving instead from person to person, unchecked, on social media networks. A lot of it is going to be word of mouth through cafe clutches, said Todd Miller, a former county commissioner, and who knows what variant of bull gets passed around there. And there's a picture of Rebecca Colden. She's a middle-aged lady, very attractive, sitting and obviously standing at the door in front of her office, and her little office to the one side with a sign outside. At the War Road Pioneer, it had been death by familiar cuts. Hardly anyone took out a classified ad anymore. Storefront retail has suffered. Duck Supermarket, the only grocer in town, preferred to put its color shopping inserts inside a fat-free, ads-only mailer called the Northland Trading Post. Colden had announced the paper's demise, one of about 65 to close in Minnesota since 2004, in a letter to community leaders. War Road's dire retail reconfiguration and exodus, she wrote, has had a catastrophic impact on this community newspaper. But what could be done? Mark Carvin off-ran the local GM dealership for years before recently selling it to his son. He thought it was a tragedy that the paper would be folding, but the new world was what it was. 15 years ago, we were 50% paper and 50% radio, he said, of the dealership's advertising budget. Now most of the money goes to the Internet. It was after 9 a.m. when the paper's remaining staff, Corin Sizer, the editor, and Jeannie Provence, the page designer, rolled into the newsroom. Shelley Gale, the office manager, had already taken a job at the Seven Clans Casino across the river. Provence mixed with the Bloody Marys, and the women hoisted their plastic cups. We're going to get this done, Colden told them. We're going to get it out. We're going to do it well. Outside, there was no grand rally to save the Pioneer. It was another day in War Road, population 1,880, in a remote stretch of Minnesota where winters can dip to minus 35 degrees Fahrenheit. farmers gossip over breakfast at the Daisy Gardens restaurant, workers trudge by the hundreds to their factory jobs at Marvin, a big window and door manufacturer that dominates the town. Part of the problem, Colin suspected, was that no one could imagine War Room without the paper that had been publishing since McKinley administration. There's that complacency, she says. With a 120-year-old paper, they were just so sure we're always going to be there. There was also reality that the truth-telling in a tiny town, while generating good copy, does not always generate love for the newspaper. On that Monday morning, Zeiser took a drink to her computer and formatted the court report, the Pioneer's unflinching weekly roll call of anyone who had recently run afoul of the law. Everyone read the court report. Over the year, people had tried to bribe their way out of it, Colin says, to no avail. If you messed up, you were going in. In fact, Colin herself had made the court report for speeding, as had Provence, for driving with expired tags, and Zeiser for driving while drunk. It was the truth at its most raw, and Colin believes it served an essential small-town function. Accountability, she says. After her appearance in the court report, Zeiser wrote a confessional column, acknowledging that her drunken driving could have killed somebody. The experience, she says, sent her on a path to a renewed Christian faith. It's one of those things that shows us that all of us are fallible, says Wayne Maxfield of Woodland Bible Church, Colden's preacher, who had been counseling her through the paper's last days, that nobody is above anybody else. Colden brought the War Road Pioneer in December 2008. Her background was in marketing, but she discovered her inner assignment editor incessantly scouring the town for story ideas. She soon found herself swimming against the current of the Great Recession. Like other publishers, she introduced a website, but it did little for her bottom line. The paper never had more than full-time employees during her tenure, and it always relied on freelancers for most of its coverage. At a point, Colden had been forced to lay off her sole freelance local government reporter. The desert was creeping closer, and people felt it. Definitely it got slim, says Bill Boyd, a Marvin employee. Even the ads, if you wanted to get a snowblower, used to look at the paper. Now all of that's on Facebook. On the Wednesday before the final edition, Colden returned from a meeting with an entrepreneur whose business acumen she valued. She had hoped it would generate some ideas that might save the paper. It had been held at Warward's small business incubator, the Discovery and Development Hub, a collaboration between the Marvin Company and the local government. The DD Hub, as it's called, is a vision of the best-case future Warward imagines for itself, with contemporary furniture and hip sans-serif fonts in the window. But when she returned to the newsroom, her staff knew from looking at her that the meeting had not fixed anything. "We read each other's minds," Sizer says. I think a lot of times people want that Hallmark story where a knight in shining armor comes out and we're going to save the day, Colden says. That was not this conversation. Her staff saw the toughness in her in April 2010 when she was forced to langle with John W. Marvin, known as Jake, the chief executive of the Marvin Company at the time and the brother of War Road's mayor, Bob Marvin. The paper had published an article about Jake's daughter, Brooke Marvin, after she had been arrested on charges of misdemeanor domestic assault, obstructing arrest, and criminal damage to property. Colden said she heard from Jake Marvin soon after the article came out. He was angry. Many considered the Marvins the town's de facto royal family. "Your name's no different than anybody else's names," Colden recalled telling him, "and we publish other people's children who get in trouble the same way." Jake Marvin told he might rescind Marvin's advertising, though he later walked back the threat. But he did rescind a favor. From that point forward, the Pioneer was no longer driven to Warward from its printer in Grafton, North Dakota, on a Marvin Company truck, and he canceled his subscription for good measure. Next week, Colden wrote an editorial defending the article. To anyone wanting to control the freedom of the press, she wrote in a memorably tart final paragraph, or to those who feel they can do a better for the community, the Warward Pioneer may be purchased for $500 million. The newspaper went on to cover two more important local stories the last decade. The first was about a budget crisis in the school district that forced teacher layoffs and a consolidation of all grades into a single school building. The Pioneer used public record laws to request emails sent by school board members, which revealed depths of infighting and dysfunction and pointed to a possible violation of open meeting laws. The second was a scandal at the County Board of Commissioners, where one of the commissioners had been accused of improperly benefit from a county gravel contract. Colden described the matter as ludicrous, an example of backwoods politics and finger pointing. that Commissioner Roger Fack was found innocent of a criminal charge in 2017. Golden's rule for Bloody Mary Monday is that vodka stops flowing at noon. In the late afternoon on that final day, like any other day, there were familiar headaches to deal with. The father of Scott Johnson, the pioneer's landlord, had died, and the obituary had just come in from the funeral home. Colton asked Provenceford to bump the issue up to 18 pages from 16. Zazer was on the phone hunting for a student who could tell her the names of two high school baseball players in a photo. Sometime after 5:30 p.m., they shipped the last of the newspaper's pages to the printer. The final issue included an article about the future of the Farmers Oil Co-op, now that its general manager had resigned. There was an article about low-interest federal loans for farmers affected by natural disasters. There was an ad inviting their readers to the 85th birthday open house in honor of a woman named Ione Carlson, and the Warroad High School prom king and prom queen were on the front page. The Pioneer Sisterhood opened a few bottles of wine. The next day, Colden dropped her last ever stack of Pioneers at the Thrifty White Pharmacy on Lake Street, and in the afternoon, she and her staff met for Bible study. Zizer read from the Book of John, "Now is your time of grief, but I will see you again, and you will rejoice, and no one will take away your joy. In that day, you will no longer ask me anything." Provence said that she was still angry about the paper's end. "I'm very ashamed of this community. We deserve better." Colden told her to let the resentment go, but the publisher admitted she was having trouble letting go herself as he drove in the warming weather and saw the farmers in their field. "I thought, we need to get those farm stores going again." The Art of the Good Meltdown. Under stress from every front, we're having more meltdowns. Here's how to lose it the right way. Preston Woodruff held it together for months during the pandemic, working in his garden and workshop, sharing meals with his daughter, and walking in the woods behind his home. Then a sneeze sent him over the edge. Woodruff was sleeping soundly when he awoke to an uncomfortable feeling in his nose. He reached for the box of tissues on his nightstand. None peeked up from the top. He tried and tried to dig one out. The entire wad remained tightly wound. So Woodruff grabbed the box, crushed it in his hands, and flung it at the far wall of his bedroom. Alone in the dark, he slammed his head back on the pillow and swore. "I momentarily lost it," said Woodruff, the retired philosophy professor. "Welcome to the meltdown. Have you had one lately?" "It's what happens after you've held it together through a pandemic and a quarantine, working from home and homeschooling, civil unrest and the most divisive public discourse in several lifetimes, on top of the dishes and the laundry and your regular familiar responsibilities. Then, when something seemingly small happens, suddenly you're alone in your car screaming or sobbing to your dog about, well, everything. People lost control of their emotions before this past year, of course, but we've been doing a whole lot more because of our sustained levels of stress, anger, and fear. We've been overwhelmed by bad news, exhausted by the need to be ever vigilant. It's no wonder our fuses have been short. Think you've never had a meltdown? Think again. Although we typically expect meltdowns to look like the adult version of a toddler's tantrum, wailing, whining, whimpering. Psychologists say they can manifest in different ways: crying, rage, silence, or an emotional shutdown. Often people don't identify with the word meltdown because of the stigma of having a mental health crisis, says Amanda Luderman, a licensed psychotherapist in Montreal. They will just say they're having a really, really horrible day. But most meltdowns have in common is a loss of emotional control, often manifested physically, and a sense of helplessness. They occur when we no longer have the emotional resources to deal with our stress, and they're typically triggered by something small and unanticipated, a stubbed toe, a spill on our shirt, or for me, recently, a broken backspace key on the laptop. Yet meltdowns have an upside. They allow us to reduce tension, and once we do that, we can think more clearly because we're no longer spending all of our energy trying to hold it together. A meltdown is the body's natural mechanism to let go, to cleanse itself of painful emotions, says Tal Ben-Shahar, a psychologist who specializes in the science of happiness. It lets us reset. Not all meltdowns are created equal. Bad ones often happen often and can hurt people around us or leave us feeling worse. Good ones are rare. Ideally take place when we're alone and leave us feeling better than we did before. To have a productive meltdown, experts say you would accept that it's happening or about to. Meltdowns are as natural as gravity, says Ben-Shahar. We need to identify what makes us feel better and explain this to others. We should be careful to manage the negative effects and explore the meaning afterwards. Woodruff, of the tissue tantrum, has minor meltdowns several times a week nowadays and takes a point of taking his frustration out on inanimate objects, throwing a piece of wood across his workshop or slamming silverware into the dishwasher. He sometimes plans his emotional purges in advance. When he replaced his walkie computer a while back, he carried the machine out to a fire pit, destroyed it with a sledgehammer, and set it on fire. That sounds like me. But Woodruff makes sure to keep his outbursts brief. It's wasted energy and wasted time to focus too long on the hostility of the moment, he says. I let it out, and then I have an immediate feeling of relief. Mike Finney was walking to his truck one afternoon and received an email from a colleague stating that some information he needed for a project wasn't available. Immediately, his stomach dropped. His fist clenched. He began stomping down the street, ranting about a growing list of complaints. A co-worker who annoyed him. The state of the country. Whether people on the street were looking at him funny. How his dad hadn't called him all week. It was like going down a rabbit hole in Alice in Wonderland, says Venny, who lives in New York City and owns a company that provides mental wellness and diversity training for corporations. It spiraled faster and faster until things felt 10,000 times worse than they really were. Luckily, Finney has a plan for dealing with meltdowns. He paused in the middle of the street to collect himself, and then got into his truck. He sat for 20 minutes and thought about the answers to the three questions. What do I feel? Anger, but also sadness at losing work and fear of whether he would get the coronavirus by going to the gym. Where do I feel it? In his chest and stomach. What do I need now? Time to feel his emotions rather than suppress them. Next, he went to the gym. The music was loud, and he cursed while he worked out. When he got home, he did yoga, which he says helps him let go of his emotions. In bed that night, Vinny realized he had a smile on his face. I felt free of it, whatever it was that had been cooking up inside of me, he says. I felt like I was in control again, like I had taken my power back. Here are some tips on how to have an effective meltdown. Accept it. Don't judge yourself. A meltdown lets you release tension and frees up energy that was spent suppressing emotions. Know what you need. Some people prefer to be left alone when they lose control. Others want a hug or a pep talk. Be clear that your loved ones about your needs, says Luderman. Model a good meltdown. No kicking the dog, punching the wall, or full-down meltdowns in front of children. It can frighten them. But showing others, especially kids, that you can express painful emotions in a way that doesn't negatively affect others can be an important lesson. Having an occasional meltdown and recovering from it helps people to see that we can be okay through these expressions, says Carrie Kralik, a licensed marriage and family therapist. Try an alternative rebellion. When we lose control, we often want to rebel, quit our job, or tell off our father-in-law. Instead, plan a healthy rebellion that satisfies the need to assert control in your life, recommends Jenny Tates, a psychologist and assistant clinical professor at the University of California, Los Angeles. One idea. Tell others that you are turning off your phone for a while and can't be reached. Then go do something you enjoy. Calm yourself, explore the meaning of your meltdown, and move on. Get some intense exercise or try paced breathing, 6 counts in and 8 counts out, to calm your nervous system. Then reflect on what happened. Apologize if you've upset others, and forgive yourself. Having a meltdown makes you human. And the answer isn't. I love that my 6-year-old enjoys watching Jeopardy, even if she just announced she wants a nano knee replacement. How about a world of good? And there's a picture of a huge pile of SpaghettiOs. Kindness. Uh-oh, SpaghettiO shortage. Like many kids, 8-11-year-old Ashley McDonald of Attleboro, Massachusetts, has a favorite meal. SpaghettiOs with meatballs, which she eats at least once a day and sometimes 3 times. Unlike other kids, Ashley's need for this comfort food is serious. She is autistic and nonverbal, and a mouthful of the canned pasta soothes her. Structure is what centers her. It gives her a sense of control when everything else seems chaotic and overwhelming, says her mom, Crystal McDonald. Ashlyn is most comfortable when she feels as if she's living Groundhog Day every day. SpaghettiOs are a sensory experience for her. Naturally, McDonald's keep their pantry stocked with SpaghettiOs. But during the run on supplies caused by the pandemic last year, stores suddenly ran out. Krista had to drive farther and farther every week to find them. Her search became so time-consuming that a local newspaper ran a story. And then something amazing happened. Strangers in the region scoured their local grocery shelves and shipped what they found to Ashland. All told, she received 400 cans from the community and another 782 from the Campbell Soup Company. Crystal is thrilled and relieved, but not nearly as much as Ashlyn. When she sees all those cans of SpaghettiOs, she's very happy, Crystal says. And there's a picture of the mom and daughter lying on the bed together, both of them smiling widely. Ingenuity. Legos to the rescue. Disabled by a car accident 25 years ago, Rita Ebel had long been frustrated by the number of shops and cafes that were inaccessible to wheelchair users. A year ago, the 62-year-old grandmother from Hanau, Germany, came up with a simple solution. Ramps made of Legos. Helped by her husband, Ebel has constructed a dozen of these surprisingly sturdy made-to-order Lego ramps for shop entrances. I'm trying to sensitize the world a bit to the barrier-free travel, said Ebel. Anyone could suddenly end up in a situation that puts in a wheelchair. That's happened to me. It's a brilliant idea, says Makia Hati, who has one of Ebel's ramps at the entrance to her hair salon. You can see from afar that you can get in here without any problems. And her picture of this lady in her powered wheelchair, and the Lego ramp is really kind of cool looking. It's all different colors, and it's sitting next to the curb on the street. Nature. Making birds turbine friendly. Birds colliding with turbine blades is one of the main negative effects of onshore wind farms. But a 9-year study at a wind farm in Smola, Norway, has found that bird strikes can be cut by more than 70% simply by painting one blade of the wind turbine black. Scientists believe this reduces what they call motion smear, allowing birds to see the three rotating blades. Trondheim-based researcher Roel May says further tests at other wind farms are needed to confirm the findings, but they sound promising. How to strengthen your immune system. Scientists don't have all the answers, but exercise, proper diet, and stress management can make you more resilient at any age. And there's a picture of a young African-American woman pulling her muscle up with a red hairband around her. She looks like Rosie Riveter. One aspect of the COVID-19 pandemic that has kept us guessing since the early days of why some people who get the virus don't suffer much and others become desperately ill. All the more, while the elderly have been particularly hard hit, some, even centenarians, survive, whereas countless younger people whose immune systems are supposed to be more robust have succumbed to it. So what factor gives some people a stronger immune system than others, regardless of age? And what does it mean if, for example, your partner or your child gets sick and you don't, or vice versa? We know that our immune systems slowly decline as we age. Doctors call it immunosenescence. It's slow and insidious. Think of a photo of yourself from 10 years ago versus one taken this afternoon. No, I don't really want to do that, thank you. You see changes in your face, skin, and hair color, says Insu Kang, MD, Director of Allergy and Immunology at the Yale School of Medicine. It takes time. Same processes with your immune system. The difference in a rate of decline between individuals is one of science's big mysteries. The immune system is complex, but most of us understand the basics. Our bodies detect an intruder, a virus, bacterium, parasite, or foreign object, and produce white blood cells to combat the problem. How many of those cells you produce when you say you're 73 versus when you're 45 is the million-dollar question, and it's the heart of the COVID-19 pandemic. Fortunately, we won't always be in a pandemic, but we can use this one to gain an understanding of how the immune system changes with age and how we might slowly decline and stay stronger in the future. Immunity and aging. No one knows why our bodies don't produce as many immune cells as we get older, says Atul Bhut, MD, Distinguished Professor of Epidemiology, Biostatistics, and Pediatrics at the University of California, San Francisco. Dr. Bhut works with a research team on a review of 242 studies that revealed some insights, especially regarding T cells, which are white blood cells that attack viruses. We possess two broad categories of T cells, memory cells that have encountered a certain pathogen and remember how to fight it, and naive cells, which have yet to fight anything. We've seen especially that the number of naive T cells seems to be lower as we age, Dr. Bhut says. And those are exactly the cells needed to recognize newly emerging microorganisms like this COVID-19 virus, says Dr. Kang. This means that when that virus, something our immune systems haven't seen before, shows up, most of us don't have the memory T cells to mobilize, so the naive cells have to take on the fight. Since older folks have fewer naive cells to fight with as a group, they are more vulnerable. But Dr. Bhut observed in a study that some healthy older people had little or no decline in T cells. Some had as many as younger people, and women generally seem to have a higher amounts as they aged. The reason these key cells decline over time could be manifold. We know genetic plays a part, Dr. Butte says, but it's debatable how big a part compared with the environment and lifestyles. What factors give some people a stronger immune system? Chronic low-grade inflammation that develops with advanced age can also affect the immune system. Lifestyle factors, poor sleep, ongoing stress, and weight gain are common causes, as are systemic issues such as autoimmune disease and decreased liver or kidney function. This inflammation causes immune systems to operate abnormally by constantly firing, which accelerates the aging process on a cellular level and can lead to heart disease, type 2 diabetes, Alzheimer's disease, and more. Most systems in our body are tightly regulated, said Sean Yeo Ling, MD, a professor of the Geriatric School of Medicine at Johns Hopkins University. The immune system is no exception, which is why this dysregulation is so dangerous. What's more, chronic inflammation is silent and produces no symptoms. Your immune system may be compromised and you don't even know it. Taking charge. When we talk about vulnerability in older adults, there are two important parts. Insensitivity, whether you get an infection of any kind, and severity. If you do become infected, having a stronger immune function can determine how badly you'll be infected, says Dr. Lang. While you can't do anything about your genetic makeup, and you may not be able to completely stop the decline in your immunity as you age, slowing it down can mean a higher immune reserve when you need it most. Fortunately, many factors that positively affect your immune system are within your control, including these. Movement. Regular workouts boost immune function and lower inflammation. A 2019 study in Nature Reviews Immunology noticed that skeletal muscles is a major immune regulatory organ that generates anti-inflammatory and immunoprotective proteins called myokines. In a 2018 study, it found that higher intensity workouts may blunt immune systems decline in older adults. Exercise strengthens the body and may be the most important lifestyle intervention you can add, Dr. Kang says. Self-knowledge. Dr. Butte suggests that people gain a better understanding of where their health is right now. For example, those with asthma, we want to start measuring their peak airflow to know what their normal lung function is. The more we can use digital devices and tools, the more we'll understand, he says. If something changes, you're not just going to the doctor and saying, I'm having trouble breathing. You can say, my airflow has dropped 8%. Staying on top of chronic conditions will also allow you to spot declines quickly so you and your doctor can decide on a better course of therapy. Nutrition. Eating right and avoiding obesity whose inflammatory effects is deadly are common sense. But research also reveals specific effects on diet on immune function in older adults. A study reviewed in the journal Nutrients in 2018 showed that basic nutrients such as vitamins A, C, D, and E and the B vitamins, along with folic acid, iron, selenium, zinc, are essential for immunocompetence, with deficiencies causing lower T-cell production and inability to resolve inflammation. Strive for balance. Eat not just vegetables, also good proteins and fiber, Dr. Kang says. The latter is important because it feeds the good bacteria in your gut and can help lower inflammation. We have a lot of immune cells in the gut that help regulate health. Dietary fiber may have more than a single effect in making the bowel move. Calm. Research has shown that unregulated stress can accelerate immunosenescence, since a chronic immune system responds to whatever stressing you can result in inflammation. Self-care in this area is critical, from anti-stress activities, meditation, mindfulness exercise, to asking for help in unresolved stressful situations, work, money, caregiving. Vaccines. Vaccines are designed to provoke the production of antigens, but our aging immune system reserves don't respond as robustly as it did in our earlier years. That shouldn't make you lazy about vaccines. It's true they become less effective as people get older, Dr. Kang says, but even if you do get infected, the disease will be less severe. People should get whatever vaccines their doctor recommends based on their age and underlying medical conditions. Medications. Certain prescription medications may inhibit your immune system. For example, oral and inhaled corticosteroids, common treatments for arthritis, allergies, asthma, and inflammatory bowel disease, may raise your risk of fungal infections. The same is true for tumor necrosis factor, TNF, inhibitors that treat autoimmune conditions such as rheumatoid arthritis and psoriasis. Even antibiotics could get gut bacteria and trigger some kinds of infection, Dr. Kang says. If you're on any ongoing medications, talk to your doctor about possible immune system side effects and how to address them. COVID-19 lessons. In addition to a newfound appreciation for hand washing and how far away 6 feet is, the COVID-19 pandemic will, in the end, teach us more about our health vulnerabilities individually and as an aging population. Dr. Butte believes the pandemic will usher in a new era of immunity research. We're going to learn a lot in a hurry, he says. Dr. Ling foresees a large push into learning more about aging and immunity by studying the older adult population, unlocking the known mechanisms of immune response. He's already part of a massive National Institutes of Health geriatric side initiative involving hundreds of researchers. The traditional medical model focuses on individual disease, he says, but we'll try to see if we can find an underlying mechanism in immunity, something upstream in the process. Then we can do a wider search rather than a chase after individual diseases. If we can do that, the older population will handle all of the immune challenges better. Is your immune system vulnerable? These are among the health conditions that can cause you to be immunocompromised, meaning your immune system is less able to fight off a viral infection. If you have been diagnosed with any of the following, take every precaution to protect yourself and talk with your doctor about whether it's necessary to address your treatment. Obesity. According to an emerging research, adipose tissue, fat, can inhibit immune function. A 2018 study of patients over three flu seasons found that obese adults took 42% longer to fight off the virus than did non-obese people. Diabetes. High blood sugar, hypoglycemia, is an inflammatory condition that tends to inhibit the immune system response and raise the risk of infection. People who have uncontrolled high blood sugar are particularly vulnerable. Cancer. Cancer and its various treatments can reduce white blood cell counts and make patients more open to infection, while at the same time making it harder to fight an infection that they do get. If you are a cancer patient or survivor, discuss your situation with a doctor who is familiar with your medical history. Asthma, COPD, and other respiratory diseases. Viruses love to attack the lungs, so people who have existing lung conditions are at risk for more severe symptoms when they do get sick. Chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, COPD, patients are particularly vulnerable to lung infections, which can further damage already compromised air sacs. Autoimmune diseases. Not only can an infection trigger a flare-up of an autoimmune disease such as rheumatoid arthritis, multiple sclerosis, or psoriasis, the treatment of those conditions often involves immunosuppressive drugs that can raise your infection risk. Also, autoimmune conditions can cause interstitial lung disease, a dangerous condition that can cause scarring of the lungs. Heart disease. Based on early data, as many as 40% of COVID-19 patients who required hospitalization had existing cardiovascular diseases, the American College of Cardiology reports. And with that, let's switch over to the Consumer Report, CR Insights. Decoding fruit juice labels. You've heard it 1,000 times. Eating a piece of fruit is better for you than fruit juice. But whole fruit doesn't always quench thirst. The key to enjoying fruit juice in a healthy way is to watch how much you sip, at most a cup a day, and know what's in it. Juice labels can be very misleading, says CR Nutritionist Amy Keating. Here's what some common juice bottle labels really mean. And there's a picture of a juice cocktail bottle. It's got big and red. It's got all kinds of label on 100% juice, juice cocktail, 100% vitamin C, from concentrate, diet, and reduced sugar. Juice drink or cocktail. These terms are tip-off if the product isn't 100% juice. Instead, the product is off a mix of juice, water, sweetener, and flavors. To avoid a mostly sugar-water mix, look for ones that contain at least 50% fruit juice. The percentage must be listed on the label, and no added sweeteners. From concentrate. Fruit juice from concentrate is juice that has had most of its water removed and is then reconstructed by adding water back in. It can be sold as 100% fruit juice or used in cocktails. Diet. Diet juice drinks or cocktails are low in calories because they're sweetened with sugar substitutes instead of sugar and have a lower percentage of fruit juice. Some research suggests that consuming alternative sweeteners may be linked to increased risk of heart disease, type 2 diabetes, and obesity. Reduced sugar. The Food and Drug Administration allows this claim when a product has at least 25% less sugar than the brand's regular product. But the ingredients list will often reveal that a sugar substitute has been added to make up for the sugar reduction. 100% juice. Per the FDA, this phrase means fruit juice that has not been diluted with water. Though sweeteners can be added, the majority of brands don't do it. Still, some do add colors, flavors, preservatives, and extra vitamins. If that's the case, you'll see the phrase with added ingredients. Vitamin C claims. High percentages of vitamin C are a selling point for juice, but don't be swayed. Most people get plenty of C in their diets already. With the exception of orange and grapefruit juices, the vitamin C is probably added. But that's not a problem. but keep in mind that juice drinks with vitamin C may also contain added sugars and or no real fruit juice at all. Images of fruit. Just because the bottle has a picture of fruit on it does not mean there's much fruit juice inside. The FDA allows manufacturers to use images to represent a drink's flavor. For example, Sunny D Orange Strawberry features images of oranges and strawberries, but it has just 5% fruit juice and no strawberry juice. What does it contain? High fructose corn syrup, natural and artificial flavors, and sucralose and artificial color red 4D. Recalls. Cooper Tires. Cooper Tire and Rubber Company is recalling a potential 430,000 tires from its Cooper Hercules, Mastercraft, and Mickey Thompson brands because of concern that the tires might develop sidewall bulges or separation from the sidewall that could lead to tire failure. The recall includes replacement tires sold to Les Schwab, Pep Boys, and Tire Kingdom. The affected models include certain Discover, Evolution, Courser, Deegan, Adventurer, Backcountry, Multi-Mile, Wild Country, and Big O models at 18 and 20-inch sizes that were manufactured from February 1, 2018 through December 1, 2019. What to do? Check your tires. The company warns that some tires may exhibit a bulge on the sidewall and advises that driving at high speeds may cause this condition to occur and should be avoided until the tires have been inspected and replaced. Owners may contact Cooper Tire at 800-854-6288. Cooper Tire number for this recall is 178. Edsel Shelving Units. Edsel is recalling about 2.2 million muscle rack heavy-duty steel shelving units because they can fail to support the 800-pound weight load as stated on the packaging, presenting risk of injury. The shelving was sold online from January 2015 to September 2020 for $80 to $100. What to do? Stop using the shelving and contact Edsel at 833-232-5287 for details and to receive a full refund. Excedrin products. GSK Consumer Health is recalling about 434,000 Excedrin migraine caplets, Excedrin migraine gel tabs, Excedrin extra strength caplets, Excedrin PM headache caplets, and Excedrin tension headache caplets because some of the bottles may have a hole in the bottom. If there is a hole, children can access and swallow the contents, posing a risk of poisoning. These products contain aspirin and acetaminophen, which must be in child-resistant packaging as required by the Poison Prevention Packaging Act. The products were sold at pharmacies, department stores, grocery stores, and online from March 2018 through September 2020 for $7 to $18. What to do? Store the bottle out of reach of children and inspect the bottom of it for a hole. If there is a hole, call GSK Consumer Relations at 800-468-7746 or go to Excedrin.com to get a prepaid return shipping label and a full refund. Bottles without a hole may be kept and used as directed. Cloud Island Infant Rompers. Target is recalling about 299,000 Cloud Island Infant Rompers because the snaps can break or detach from the rompers, posing a choking, laceration, and pinching hazards to children. The rompers were sold at Target stores and online at Target.com, ExpressGoogle.com, and Shipt.com from July 2019 through October 2020 for about $10 for a single romper set and $11 for a two-pack romper set. What to do? Stop using the romper and return it to any Target store for a full refund. If you bought the romper on Target.com, call 1-800-440-0680 or go to Target.com for a prepaid return label. Hampton Bay Ceiling Fans. King of Fans is recalling about 182,000 Hampton Bay 54-inch Mara indoor-outdoor ceiling fans because the blades can detach from the fan while in use. Ooh, that could be uncomfortable. The fans were sold at Home Depot stores and at HomeDepot.com from April 20, 2020 through October 2020 for about $150. What to do? Stop using the fan and inspect it using the instructions at kingoffans.com/mararecall.htm. If you see the blade movement or uneven gaps between the blades and the fan body or movement of the clip during inspection, contact King of Fans 866-443-1291 for a pre-replacement ceiling fan. Cat and Jack Infant Toddler Swimsuits. Target is recalling about 181,000 Cat and Jack Infant Toddler One-Piece Rash Guard Swimsuits because the snaps can break or detach from the suits. Boy, that seems to be a problem. Posing choking and laceration hazards to children. The suits were sold at Target stores and online at Target.com from December 2019 through October 2020 for about $15. What to do? Return the swimsuit to any Target for a full refund if you bought it at Target.com. Call 800-440-0680 or go to Target.com to get a prepaid return label. May is the best time to buy grills, strollers, exterior paints, and air mattresses. Product update. Wi-Fis. In the last 5 years, mesh routers have radically improved the quality of life in many American homes, helping Wi-Fi-hungry families quickly and effectively eliminate the slowdowns and dead spots in their Wi-Fi networks. What's the secret? Unlike traditional router, a mesh router uses multiple devices, a hub, and often two satellite units, that work together wirelessly to blanket your dwelling and Wi-Fi coverage. Relaying the signal from your internet service provider deep into every corner of the space. A larger house, 3,000 to 5,000 square feet, or one with a rambling layout, the multi-part design is a significant advantage. It allows you to move the satellites around, pushing the signal farther into a spare bedroom or outside to the deck, while also steering it away from the potential roadblocks, such as doors, walls, plumbing, and appliances. Until very recently, however, you had to have deep pockets to afford this Wi-Fi cure. We're talking to $300 to $500 for a good mesh router system. Happily, in the last 12 months, a new generation of lower-cost options has made this fix more affordable. At the moment, 11 of the 19 models in our ratings range from $150 to $250. But are those models any good? The answer is a resounding yes. Most do a great job of spreading fast, stable Wi-Fi throughout your home. Here's a look at what our tests have found. Do the low-cost options give the same performance? Our testing data shows wall-to-wall coverage can be yours for less. You'll find very comparable performance, speed-wise and coverage-wise, between budget-friendly mesh routers and their pricing siblings. For example, the $400 Netgear Orbi AX4200 at the top of our ratings chart scored 5 out of 5 for throughput speed, the rate at which internet data is communicated at the near, mid-range, and far distance we use to stimulate the environment in a typical home. But so does the $230 Netgear Nighthawk AX1800 that sits in the number 2 spot. In fact, many of the $200 models actually outperform the pricer rivals in our throughput tests. Do you get the same feature? Given the high-end price, you might expect to find far more features on a $500 mesh router. But that's not necessarily the case. The $200 options are just as likely to offer a simple setup and management via a mobile app that you download to your phone or tablet, parental controls that can help you limit access, and automatic firmware data updates which protect you and your data by ensuring that you always have the latest security patches in place. At times, a pricier model will offer more Ethernet and USB ports, letting you connect additional devices, printers, external hard drives, etc., to your router via cable. This lets you share those devices with other family members on the network and give, say, your game console a slightly stronger and faster Wi-Fi signal than a wireless connection provides. The $340, $45 Asus AX6100, for example, has 8 Ethernet ports and 2 USB ports. But if you shop around, you'll find lower-priced models with 2 or 3 Ethernet ports. Want enough for a fleet of game consoles? The $150 TP-Link Deco Whole Home has 6. 3 signs you need a new router. Here are a few good reasons to spring for a more up-to-date model, mesh or otherwise. Number 1. The model you own is ill-equipped to handle all your devices. For most people, a Wi-Fi router should work just fine. For others, a Wi-Fi 6 model can better manage traffic jams created by multiple smartphones, laptops, and smart home devices. If everyone in the house enjoys gaming or streaming Netflix in 4K, it might be time for a Wi-Fi 6 router. Number 2. The model you own puts your data at risk. If your current router has been discontinued by its manufacturer, it may be ineligible for security updates. This exposes all the personal info flowing in and out of your network to the threat of hackers and other bad actors. To check on the model status, do an online search for the manufacturer's end-of-life list. Number 3. The model you use has a high rental fee. If you're giving your internet service provider $10 a month or more, you can buy a new model that pays for itself within 2 years. As part of the bargain, you also get more control of your router's privacy and security setting. Do you get the latest tech? If you go shopping for any router this year, you'll almost certainly hear about Wi-Fi 6 and Wi-Fi 6E, hotly marketed tech upgrades not long ago by the Wi-Fi Allowance. Routers that support Wi-Fi 6 are designed to better manage the growing army of internet-connected devices in the average home. Think laptops, tablets, smartphones, smart speakers, and all that other gear now vying for your Wi-Fi signal. Wi-Fi 6E was created for high-density environments such as apartment buildings where neighbors' devices can interfere with your signal. If you live in a high-tech home, one flush with state-of-the-art gadgets like the iPhone 12 and PlayStation 5, both designed for Wi-Fi 6, you may want to consider springing for a router with that technology. At the moment, only three of the lowest-cost mesh routers are ready to support Wi-Fi 6, also known as 802.11ax. The rest use the older Wi-Fi 5 standard from 2014. For most users, Wi-Fi 5 should be more than adequate for years to come, and you can always take advantage of the prioritization feature included on most mesh routers, regardless of price, which lets you choose the devices get first dibs on the Wi-Fi signal. Using the mobile app, simply adjust the settings so that nothing slows mom's laptop connection. Is there a cheaper option? In certain scenarios, a $30 Wi-Fi range extender might be all you need to address the trouble spot in your house. Let's say you have a Wi-Fi dead zone in your home office. To fix it, you simply plug the extender into a power outlet midway between your router and the office, and the Wi-Fi signal gets pushed deeper into your house. Just keep in mind that this is not a perfect selection. An extender effectiveness is limited by a number of factors, including the speed of the internet connection coming into your home, the distance from your router, and the Wi-Fi demands of your family. You're also likely to notice a significant drop-off in signal speed in the extended zone, as much as 50% according to our test. The slowdown might not be an issue if you're just hoping to read email on the back deck, but it won't cut it if you're trying to get everyone on the second floor a strong signal for streaming movies or joining Zoom meetings. In that case, you're better off with a mesh router. Regular router versus a mesh router. What's the difference? It all comes down to precision and price. A traditional router may be cost-effective, but a mesh router gives you more control over where the Wi-Fi signal goes. Cost. The traditional routers we tested fall between $60 and $400. The mesh routers on our ratings on the range from $150 to almost $500. Coverage. In a large house or in a house with thick walls or obstacles that create Wi-Fi dead spots, the hub plus satellite setup of a mesh router can help extend the signal and point it where it's needed. Logistics. The farther the signal gets from a traditional router, the more it degrades. If possible, place the device in the center of your home. You may need a long Ethernet cable to move it. Ideally, the hub of a mesh router should also go in the center of your home between its two satellites, says Richard Fisco, who oversees electronics testing for CR. That way, the signal has to make only one hop to each satellite to be relayed. Cleaning secrets for every room. Our homes, appliances, and gadgets are getting a lot of extra use because of the pandemic. Here are easy tricks to remove grit, grime, and germs in a safe and healthy way. And there's a picture of a bunch of rooms, starting with a bedroom. Clear out crumbs in the keyboard, turn it upside down, give it a good shake, and slip the sticky end of a Post-it between the keys. And as the bathroom, make mildew disappear. Spray a bleach solution on shower doors and leave it for 30 minutes. In the living room, get ceiling fans dust-free. Cover each blade with a pillowcase, then pull it off along with any debris. Keep your fridge in the kitchen. Wipe away food bits in the door gasket with a sponge and maintain a seal to keep cold air in. There's also a picture of the laundry room, but it doesn't give anything for that up the top. Okay, let's go through the full works here. More than a year into the pandemic, you may be a little weary of house-clearing chores. Some items, hello, stovetop, are getting grubbier faster because they're using so much during the extended home stay. And many of us are scrubbing and disinfecting daily in an effort to keep COVID-19 at bay. Well, step away from the spray cleaner at least for a bit. There's no evidence that cleaning more frequently prevents you from getting COVID-19, says James H. Dickerson, Ph.D., Chief Scientific Officer of Consumer Reports. Earlier in the pandemic, some studies did suggest that the coronavirus could live on hard surfaces for days, even weeks. But most experts now agree that contact with a doorknob an infected person has touched presents no real significant risk. As Emmanuel Goldman, Ph.D., microbiologist at Rutgers University, says, the reason there was a big push about the transmission on surfaces was due to experiments in highly controlled environments, not related to the real world. In addition, since unlocking the form of coronavirus found on the surfaces in most studies, viral RNA is infectious, he says, calling it the corpse of the virus. Transmission generally occurs, we now know, through close contact with an infected person or via small airborne particles. If someone at home has COVID-19, some extra steps are prudent. The daily use of a product like Lysol, Clorox, and Lonza, or a solution of 1/3 cup of bleach in a gallon of room temperature water to clean high-touch objects such as light switches in a shared bathroom. Pay attention to the disinfectant do's and don'ts. When using these products, always ventilate the air and wear rubber or disposable gloves and put on eye goggles to prevent disinfectant from splashing into your eyes. And to ensure proper disinfection, leave the bleach and water solution on surface for at least a minute before wiping and other disinfectants for the recommended period of time. There are other timing considerations. It's best to clean, then disinfect shortly after a household member is diagnosed with COVID-19, says Jason Marshall, an SD director of the Toxins Use Reduction Institute's cleaning lab at UMass Lowell, adding that waiting 24 hours will allow most of the airborne viruses to settle out. You want to ventilate your home, have the ill person use a separate bedroom or bathroom if possible. Social distance or wear a mask when you're near each other, and wash your hands well and often. That last step is one of the best ways to prevent any number of infectious illnesses from spreading, because soap and water can eradicate many common pathogens. COVID-19 aside, there still is a matter of other germs, like those from raw meat drips on a kitchen countertop, or your dog's occasional accident on the floor, as well as the seemingly endless household dirt and dust we're all dealing with. This guide offers a bounty of expert strategies to help you quick clean the items you're using most and handle the bigger messes and germs right away without overdoing it. You may even find that results are a mood booster, which has been difficult to come by during the challenges of the past year. What really helps mental well-being is a sense of productivity and doing meaningful things, says Craig Sawchuk, Ph.D., a psychologist who's the co-chair of the Division of Integrated Behavioral Health at the Mayo Clinic. Cleaning, for some people, really lands on both spots. A little caveat here. We may not get through all this all the way today. If not, we'll finish up next week. Get it clean, your coffee maker. They're showing a picture of a drip coffee maker. After every use, wash the carafe and brew basket in your electric drip coffee maker with dish soap and water, then rinse well and dry. Wipe away coffee stains on the appliance with a damp sponge. To remove burned-on bits from the hot plate, let it cool, then shake a bit of baking soda on a damp sponge and wipe. To get rid of the minerals in dried coffee oil in tanks and tubes that can affect the taste of your Joe, occasionally run a mixture of water and white vinegar through the machine. Check your owner's manual for the ratio, then run water through the coffee maker a couple times. Cast out kitchen grime. The challenge. Kitchens are among the home's germiest spots, says Dollar Schaefer, Ph.D., at Rutgers University of Food and Microbiology. And with many of us eating our 3 squares at home day in and day out, food prep grunge builds up fast on appliances and counters. Top tools, sponge, baking soda, soft cloth, disinfectant cleaner, dish soap, abrasive cleaner, either gel or spray, glass cleaner, or stainless steel polish. Dirt busters. Remove smudges from appliance exteriors with a cleaning and polishing product made for stainless steel, if you have that finish, or just a damp cloth or other materials. Wipe off food and grease from gas stovetops with a scrub pad and hot soapy water after meal prep. The same should help inside the oven. There, cover tough stains with a wet cloth and let it sit a bit, and then hit them with a scrub pad and soapy water again. For badly stained burner covers and grates, leave them overnight in a sealable plastic bag with 1/4 cup of ammonia, so you can easily wipe them clean the next day. Ventilate when using ammonia. Really need a deep clean? While some ovens have lower temperature self-cleaning modes, high temperature self-cleaning is the most effective, says Tara Caracajolia, who oversees CR's range tests. To keep odors and gunk in your frigid bag, go over plastic surfaces regularly with a sponge dipped in a cup of baking soda, mixed with a quart of water. An open box of baking soda in the fridge helps odor-proof further. Gee, my mother used to use that years and years ago. Wipe the door gasket with a damp sponge or cloth to maintain a good seal and keep the cold air in. Smelly dishwasher? Pull out any food bits you see at the bottom and rinse the filter as needed. You can also remove the spray arms and poke out any food that's stuck in the holes with a toothpick. Put condensation to work for microwave cleaning. Pop a bowl of water mixed with a 1/4 cup of lemon juice inside and run the unit on high for a minute. Then wipe. If the caked-off food won't budge, scrape it off with an old credit card. But avoid the window. This works in ovens, too. For food particles and grease residue on sinks, check with the manufacturer for abrasive cleaners that won't scratch, advises Brenner Cesari, Senior Vice President at the American Cleaning Institute. In general, liquid spray and gel cleaners are less abrasive than powders, he says. With countertops, carry in one size fits all, says John Gagliofatiora, Director of Product Testing at CR. So follow the manufacturer's advice for cleaning yours. For instance, an end-of-day sweep with a damp cloth may be all you need for quartz, while a soft cloth sponge dipped in dish liquid and water works for granite, laminate, and butcher block. In general, script scrubber sponges on counters, Dickerson says, it can score them, leaving crevices and cracks where bacteria can get in and reside. Germ warfare. If someone at home has COVID-19, going over high-touch areas like countertops and fridge handles with a soapy sponge will wash away virus particles, says. But you can also use a coronavirus-killing disinfectant. Otherwise, attend to areas where a high level of microbes are common. Sponges and sink drains. When there's moisture in food, bacteria can multiply, Schaefer says. So at least weekly, use a scrub brush to clear the sink drain of food, particles, and grime, then spray it with a household disinfectant. Throw dirty sponges in the dishwasher with a drying cycle, or microwave for a minute and a half of water with a bit of water in a dish. The Department of Agriculture found these to be the best method for killing foodborne bacteria. Clean and disinfect surfaces and items that have come into contact with raw meat or eggs, says Marshall. Think countertops, handles, and sinks. Cleaning away visible dirt first with soap and water will enhance disinfective effectiveness. Mop up food spills in the fridge right away. You also may want to swab the inner surfaces regularly with soap and water or disinfectant, and give grubby shelves and bins a warm water and soap bath in the sink, says Larry Cufo, CR's test engineer for refrigerators. Your garbage disposal. Take a preventive step to keep grease from clogging the sink, draining, impeding grinding. Always run the tap and the disposal before you add waste. If you're grinding greasy foods, use hot water. Keep the disposal running until all the waste has been flushed away. To break up any grease clogs that do occur, grind a few ice clubs in the disposal. Is the disposal smelling a little funky? To deodorize it, fill your sink halfway with water, pour in a half cup of baking soda, pull out the sink stopper, and turn on the disposal. And let's close out with a little bit of all in a day's work. Our teenage granddaughter was thrilled when she landed her first real job waiting tables, but after one shift, the excitement seemed to have waned. How do you like being a waitress? I asked. She shrugged. It would be okay if people would keep asking for stuff. We were dining out with my husband's colleague, a therapist, who told us that her 7-year-old daughter had recently asked, Mommy, what's normal? Our friend only gave a response that only mother who's analyzed one too many patients could give. Honey, normal is what people are before you get to know them. And with that, we are just about out of time for today's episode of Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Please be sure to listen in next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. I'm Jim Cronin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. So long until next time, and thanks so much for listening.